This is New Business Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to Water Talks on New Business Radio, a podcast and radio special inspiring the Dutch water sector and business professionals around the globe. Today, we're talking about raising awareness on the vital importance of socially inclusive behavior in international water projects and master planning. Dennis, I would like to start with you. From a government point of view, what would you say is the biggest challenge to tackle concerning socially inclusive behavior in international water projects and master planning at this point?
Well, of course, government has a very important responsibility, especially the Netherlands, being such an open and international actor, very active in the international water sector, trying to support other governments, other countries with improving their water management, and of course also providing the funding for that. One of the big risks is that we do not create maybe enough space for ourselves in our government-to-government relation to actually design the process in such a way that we are making space for social inclusion and for getting to know cultures and for listening and for providing the time and space for the experts that we employ, because we do not do it ourselves, of course. We contract the experts in the Dutch water sector to do this work, to give them more time and to design such a process where social inclusion has a better place. And that's, there's two things that we need to do. I think we need to make sure that in our dialogue with foreign governments, we stress the importance of social inclusion. That's one, very important. And two, in our contracting, I think we need to make sure that we, in our terms of references, we ask the people that we are asking to do this work for us to design better processes and to come up with good approaches for social inclusion and to provide them the space and time to deliver inclusive practices. So I think those two things are, from the side of the government, things that we can work on and things that we can do better.
Tanya, do you recognize what Dennis is saying here from Arcadis' point of view?
Yes, I definitely recognize. We are doing projects which usually take 6 months up to 18 months maximum. And if you want to work with communities and with other stakeholders, you need to build relations. It's all built on trust and understanding, and that takes time. So even if you involve them from the start of the project, before everybody is up and running and really involved, time has passed and we are already at the end of the project.
Do you also think there's a bigger role for governments like the Dutch to check if, for example, Arcadis is up to the job and will do the job correctly?
Well, I think during the project, of course, we have progress meetings with our clients like RVO, and that's going quite well. But I think that is important for follow-up. So when the project is finished, you need to monitor and evaluate the impact of social inclusivity for social sector in our projects. And that's something that needs to be done after 1 year, maybe 2 years, 3 years, after the project, the consultancy project is implemented. And I think for that, the community of practice that Dennis was referring to, in which we exchange our lessons learned among the water sector, also the NGOs and the knowledge sector, is a good platform to discuss how we can monitor and evaluate the impact we make.
Dennis, can you tell a little bit more about that community of practice? What I know is that in the Netherlands, several parties have formed a community of practice together to share experiences and learn and work together on improving international efforts in projects and master planning processes. What can you add to that?
Well, basically, I initiated it because I noticed over the past years that we always, different segments of the water sector, engineering firms, government, NGOs, they're often talking about each other but never with each other about this topic. So by creating this community, we create a safe space where points of view can be exchanged without and learning environment can be created where without people feeling threatened. Because before that, We talked about each other during conferences and in newspaper articles and in podcasts. On one hand, that's useful because you get a critical dialogue, but at the same time, it's not really a dialogue. So now we're able to put all those different Dutch stakeholders in a room together, and also giving them the opportunity to listen, to hear perspectives from local stakeholders. For example, we did a session in October on the work of the Dutch water sector in the Manila Bay Metropole. And there we had also local stakeholders dialing. That's a good thing about working in an online environment nowadays, giving their perspective of how they viewed Dutch activity and the Dutch involvement and the way the Dutch designed the process. That's very productive and constructive because of the safe environment, people can easily and safely exchange points of view and learn from each other. That's basically what we're trying to do.
What makes it so safe?
Well, first of all, the Chatham House rules. So we agree with each other that we keep the things that we talk about within the group, unless there's permission and everybody agrees that things are being discussed to exchange, to put the views out in the open. And so far, that works well.
Aditi, in what way is the Red Cross involved in this platform, this community of practice?
So one of the Red Cross actually has a whole lot of tools. I was just thinking, as Dennis and Tania were speaking, that there are a whole lot of participative tools that the Red Cross has, the Climate Center has, to do vulnerability assessments and to look at capacities of local populations and to weave them into the larger projects. So for instance, to give you one example, one of these exercises or games, as we call it, and these all have to do with adult learning because we often cannot train people or get their feedback through PowerPoints, is the three circle game that we do, where we actually work with the local groups to plot some of the solutions that they think to a problem related with water. And so we say, okay, so if this is flood prone areas, say in a slum or in a village, and we're really looking at urban water infrastructure, then this particular solution, will it only solve your flood problem? Will it also look at what are the climate risks? The fact that in Chennai, for instance, now floods are coming every 2 years, and they may come even earlier because the pattern of rains is changing. It's becoming much more intense. The showers are much more intense, and the drains cannot take so much water away. So especially for people living around the drain, which is what we discovered when we were doing the Water as Leverage program last year, was 2 years back, this is this three circle game. They said, no, this is a solution which will only take care of the floods, but if the floods increase, then no, it will not take care of that. And the third point is that will it erode some of the more soil over there, make it difficult for them to go to school or to go to work? Then obviously that also needs to be looked at, which means the ecosystem as we know it. Yeah, so the environmental resources that they have, those also need to be conserved. So this is a very participative tool where they look at the problems, they look at the solutions from their own perspective, they come up with these solutions which will really stand them in good stead for a longer term. And then if you weave them into the design itself, that is something that is really going to sustain, and they're going to be comfortable with that. So I've just given you one example, but we have several of these examples, including one where we are looking at what is the timing of these events that are happening, how are they shifting, what is it that we need to do if water collects in a particular area, say in the month of May, or now it's in July and it gives rise to mosquitoes, then in the whole structure, we also need to feed that in, which a water infrastructure may not have thought of, mosquitoes, what does that have to do? But it's core, for the well-being of the community. So I think these are some of the things that come up when we are really, co-creating, as has been used, really discussing the designs with the community, getting them, to actually give them that contours, those are the kind of things that really come up. I just want to give you one example from a village where I had gone many decades back, and which really started me thinking that, oh God, I mean, these engineers, they obviously don't think of social inclusion, because I went to this village, which was a very backward village, and women actually used to have a veil on their faces, and the hand pump, you know, they'd done a whole lot of water infrastructure over there, and the hand pump was right in the middle of the village square. And women felt so strange going there to actually either take a bath or just to sit there for a long time to wash clothes, etc. Mm-hmm. They would carry pails of buckets back to their homes to do that. So I think simple things like that are extremely important. And this is what comes when you actually sit down and create those designs together and take these so-called little things into consideration for a much more socially inclusive water project.
Dennis, you're known to have a bit of a critical point of view on the whole matter. Can you give some examples of that, maybe from Jakarta, Manila, places you've worked with?
Yeah, sure. Well, one thing I just want to react quickly to what Aditi just said. I mean, it's all about observing and listening. Eh? So the example that Aditi gave us is all about making sure that you observe local custom and local culture. And talking to people and listening to them. And that's one of the things we do not do enough. Basically, sometimes I say, the Dutch expert already has designed the plan and the project before he steps on the plane at Schiphol Airport. Eh? But we need to make sure that the Dutch expert steps on the plane, first starts listening and observing to include these type of local perspectives and cultures into the plan, and then base the design, his design, together with the local community. Yes, indeed. Quite critical. The Dutch water sector in its endeavors, especially in Asia, so the Dutch water sector has been very active over the past decade in the city of Jakarta, facing land subsidence problems and sea level rise, causing a lot of flooding. More recently, over the past years, also very active in the Manila Bay metropole, and before that, also in the Mekong Delta and in Ho Chi Minh City, and nowadays also very strongly active in the Bangladesh Delta and the Myanmar Delta. Well, for example, what we learned in Jakarta was that we thought, as a Dutch water sector, we thought that we prepared a good plan because technically it was all correct, and there were stakeholder workshops, etc. But and the final design was okay. Well, we recommend you to build a beautiful seawall, which also creates a lot of value because it's going to have a nice shape and it's going to create new land. And on that land, you can also create value because you build new buildings and that can be rented out and profit can be made. That was also one of the things that the Indonesian government wanted because there were not enough public funds to build that seawall. Through that channel, so you need private investors so that to actually co-fund the flood protection structure. But what happened is that which was overseen is that because of that land development and that seawall, the access to the sea of the local fishermen was closed, and those local fishermen, they became a very vocal opponent of the whole plan, and they also blamed the Dutch water sector. They blamed the Dutch for coming up with this plan, besides, of course, their own government. But they blamed the Dutch for coming up with this plan, and they named and shamed even Dutch companies. You know, there'd been protests in Jakarta about that. So that was quite of a wake-up call for us that, look, you know, even though we have good intentions, even the best intention, we want the best for the city, for the country, for the people, we think we're doing well, and we're listening to the advice of the Dutch government, and especially the wishes of the Indonesian government, it doesn't mean that you're without risk. And it showed us that you need to really have a very thorough analysis of the local situation and of the local stakeholders, so stakeholders and local livelihoods also, especially, before you actually table a plan. It's also one of the reasons why we entered more into conversation with each other. I think we learned a lot from that.
We're going to take a quick break. More Water Talks on New Business Radio coming up.
Dit is New Business Radio.